I had quite an interesting day today. I received approximately 15 phone calls from people all over the place. My doorbell rang about 10 times. The dog is barking and biting everybody who comes in. My daughter's playing the stereo at full blast. And yet my body responded the way it's supposed to. But I had absolutely nothing to do with it. It didn't affect me, the self, one iota. Yet my body did what it had to do. Took care of the calls, answered the door, quieted the dog, turned down the stereo. But I had absolutely nothing to do with it. I'm bringing this point up to show you that you can be in the most horrendous situations and be at peace. It doesn't matter what you're going through. Even death. It makes no difference. The real you has absolutely nothing to do with it. You are free from the whole thing. There may be wars all around you. People fighting and stabbing each other. People quiet and peaceful. Look at both those situations the same way, with even-mindedness. Do not react to anything. Do not allow your mind to go out and respond. Do not think past your nose. Your body is going to do whatever it has to do. But you are not your body. Anything that you respond to is a product of your mind. It is your mind that becomes angry. It is your mind that becomes stubborn. It is your mind that wants to get even. It is your mind that is hurt. But if you subdue your mind, tell me, where's the anger? Where's the depression? Where's the response to conditions? There isn't any. When the mind is subdued, there is only eternal peace. And that peace is the self, consciousness. Consciousness is always peaceful, always happy. It has nothing to do with conditions. All conditioning comes from the mind. Therefore, I say to you, do not try to change conditions. Do not try to change situations. Simply learn how to control the mind by making it passive and quiet. And then you will find that things turn out better for you than you can possibly ever hope for. There are no problems. there is nothing wrong. Everything is unfolding as it should. Everything happens in its own time. Space and time are illusions. They really do not exist. They're stationary. Causation does not exist either. No thing has a cause. Therefore, nothing has an effect. Cause and effect are again products of your own mind. When the mind is quiet, karma ceases. Samskaras are non-existent. There never was a cause for anything. But if you feel that in a previous life you did something wrong and now you're paying the price, or if you think you did something wrong in this life and you're paying the price, then you'll pay the price because that's what you think. There is virtually no price to pay. Because nothing ever happened. If it appears to have happened to you, then you have to go through the consequences of having the effect return. Or karma will come back to you. Because that's what you feel, that's what you believe. It's all in your feelings and your belief system. But if you feel as if you're born every moment becomes brand new. Where's the effect? There's no time for any effect. There's no space in which to have the effect. Space and time and causation become one, the present moment. And if you feel like that, then you can look into the future, which doesn't exist. And see what's happening. It all has to do with your mind. As long as you feel situations, you know it's your mind that's doing it. There's a story about Buddha and the Cartesian. One day Buddha and his devotees were going through a forest and they came to a town. The word spread through the town that Buddha was coming. And there was a beautiful home where there lived this Cartesian, this high-class prostitute. She heard about the wonder of Buddha, how beautiful he was. And she said to herself, I must have this man. So she sent her handmaidens out to the edge of the forest where Buddha was camping. And they beseeched him to come see their mistress. Buddha's devotees tried to chase them away. But Buddha said, no, I will go. And the devotees told that he was crazy. How come he's going with them? He said, I shall return right here. He went into this mansion of a home and he saw this beautiful lady. And she looked at him and she said, I wasn't wrong. And she told the Buddha, stay with me. I will give you riches that you never dreamed of. I will give you love that you've never known. And the Buddha smiled and said, not now. And she beseeched him and said, I will give you my body. You will have love that you never experienced. I will give you my home, stay with me. I will make you the happiest man that ever lived. And Buddha said, no, not now. And this went on for a couple of hours. Finally, she got worn out. And Buddha said, thank you, and left. He went back to his devotees, didn't say anything. They traveled through the forest and left the town. 30 years passed. The Buddha was going through the town again. One of his devotees, all of a sudden, remembered something. And he told his devotees, stay here and wait for me. I have to come see my beloved. So he went back to where the house used to be. It was now nothing but a shambles. And he looked for the lady. He saw people laughing in the street. And there she was, a beggar with leprosy. People shunning her and spitting at her. And he came over to her and he said, my beloved, I have returned for you. Now I want you as much as you wanted me. And he kissed her on the forehead and she was healed. She became his disciple and spent the rest of her life with the Buddha. The moral of that story, of course, is things are not the way they seem. We judge situations by the way they appear. We look at someone and we think that's the way they are. We respond to conditioning. We've been brainwashed since we were children to believe that things are supposed to be a certain way. But things are not supposed to be anyway. Things just are. They have no substance, they have no reality. As you respond to conditions, you're simply wasting your energy. Or you can be using that energy to uncover yourself, to discover your own reality. What are you doing with your life? How do you spend your days? the appearance is that your body is getting older and older. And if you're still judging by appearances, you try to look younger and younger by putting creams on your face, by exercising day and night, by buying the finest clothes. It's like beating a dead horse. The so-called body is not meant to last. As soon as you were born, you began to die. Therefore, find out who was born, who dies, who has experiences, who is going through this entire mess, who needs it, who wants it. Wake up. The question is always asked in this respect: if it's necessary to do sadhana in order to awaken. Is it necessary to spend years in yoga techniques and pranayama, breathing exercises, to sit in meditation and think of certain things, to pray? Is all this necessary? What do you think? Who can tell me? That's actually a good answer. My question is, therefore, to whom is it helpful? Who's getting satisfaction from sadhana? Only your ego. It is true, to an extent, you're subduing your ego. But you and I know many people who've been doing sadhana for 100 years and nothing happened. As a matter of fact, some have even become worse. It's paradoxical. For some people, it causes them to move ahead. But it's all in relative terms. And as we all know by now, relative terms do not exist. So for whom is sadhana? Again, it's for the mind and the ego. If you think it's helping, by all means continue. But remember, I said if you think it's helping. If you stop thinking, you do not have to do any sadhana. I suppose sadhana is necessary as long as you believe you are the mind and the body. Again, after all, who is doing the spiritual disciplines? Does the self need to do them? Does consciousness need to do discipline? Does absolute reality need discipline? What needs discipline? The mind and the body. Therefore, the more you are attached to the mind and the body, the more you have to do sadhana. Does that make sense?
Sadly, yes.
So I won't say to you, stop doing it, due to the fact many of you have a strong connection with your body and your mind. And as long as you do, I suppose sadhana makes you sort of quiet for a while. It gives you its own experience of a sort of peace that doesn't last too long. It causes samadhi for some people, nirvikalpa samadhi. But if you're an aspiring jnani, what's the purpose of sadhana? You simply ask yourself, who needs to do this? I do. What is this I? This personal I, where did it come from? How did it get here? Who gave it birth? As you ask yourself these questions, that is your sadhana. That's all you need to do. But you continue doing this 24 hours a day. That's what it means by praying without ceasing. As you meet the challenges of the day, you keep asking yourself, to whom does this come? Who's feeling this condition? Who's going through the situation? Who feels emotional? As you keep doing this all day long, you will find that you become more peaceful. You become happy. And your life becomes better. That's really the only sadhana you got and you need. But of course, if you cannot do that, then you have to do whatever you have to do, whatever helps you. That's what you have to do. I suppose that's why it says that Yanamaga, Atma Vichara, is for the mature soul. One who can do this regularly without reverting back to Hatha Yoga or Raja Yoga. They all have their place. But self-inquiry is the royal way. It's the shortcut. That's up to you. It's your choice. And of course, self-inquiry is merely to quiet the mind. It's a fast method to quiet the mind. For when you ask, to whom does this come? It comes to me. And you hold on to that me by inquiring, who am I? What is I? And saying I to yourself. I. The mind becomes quieter and quieter. The deeper you go within yourself, the quieter you become. And that's your sadhana. That's all you have to do. Any questions? No, I wasn't really aware of anything.
It was just something that was just happening.
Something was happening, okay. And responding accordingly.
Yeah.
But there was no feeling or emotion or anything.
I see. The card you gave us on Sunday said, be an irrepressible fountain of happiness. If a person feels that way, then that also just the ego entertaining itself, or is this?
It depends why you feel like that. Do you feel that way? Well, that's good. That's all you need to do. But if you feel like that because of a reason, because of a condition. See, that card is really for the ego. When you're working out of the ego, you have to force yourself to be happy, to try to be good to people, to develop loving kindness, and develop all of these emotions.
What if it because just happens to you without any purpose?
Then you're advanced. That's a good sign.
If opportunities, if the doorbell ringing becomes a wonderful opportunity, and the telephone ringing,
yeah,
is
you don't hear it going to where the sound is.
When it rings, feeling like something wonderful is happening, if that starts to ego again.
Well, when the doorbell rings and the phone rings, it's not supposed to feel that something wonderful is happening. You're supposed to be wonderful within to begin with. And then that's just the happening that's going on. But if you're
what if everything seems to be a good lesson?
Well, that's good for your growth then.
Even, go right, going, even going bowling could be a good way of working on oneself.
It could be, there's no question about that, but for whom? We get back to the ego again.
The ego goes
forward. The ego does everything. Everything you do is the ego. When the time comes when you know beyond a certain, with certainty, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that you are not the ego and you are not the body of the mind, then everything happens spontaneously.
And
the doorbell rings, you answer the door.
I suppose most of us would be acutely aware of that when we're not attached to our body.
Oh, of course. When you're not identified with the body, there's nobody left to be aware. It's just a spontaneous happening. There are no words to really describe it.
But another thing, when you were talking about the Buddha kissing the courtesan and healing her, healing was a good thing then. It was good for her. It was something he gave to her. It was, in other words, the appearance of her being a leper was not as good as the appearance of her being a healthy woman. So he chose to heal her.
For her, it was necessary for this to happen. This was her experience. It isn't good.
It's not necessary for everyone to be healed.
No, it's not. It's neither good nor bad. Because after all, what is healed? The body which doesn't even exist. So why should you waste your time healing a body that doesn't exist?
If there are more lessons to be learned in this life, then a person who is well is more able to advance, and I don't understand reincarnation, but is more able to, well, to get further and, as you said the other night, come back with more advantages of understanding.
That's how it appears.
Pardon me?
That's how it appears, but in reality, there's no causation for existence. So none of that is relevant. It's only relevant when your mind is on that level.
There really is no cause and no effect.
And reality doesn't exist.
Absolute reality.
Absolutely.
But on this plane, as we know it, as we're making our way toward understanding.
But who knows this plane? The ego. Therefore, if you work on destroying the ego, there are no planes to contend with. And there's no relative world to contend with. It all goes back to the ego. The ego has to work things out. The ego has to make progress. The ego tells you you're healthy or sick. The ego gets you in trouble. So don't try to change the condition.
Can it get you out of trouble too?
When you destroy it.
It is trouble.
It's trouble to begin with, right?
The only trouble.
And it doesn't even exist.
If one is even, as we're all apparently stuck in this ego.
Speak for yourself.
I'm on this side of the room.
How do you know what's going on this side of the room?
As we are, as we appear to be in this ego life. If we find it easy or not even easy, but just natural or whatever, to live as an irrepressible source of happiness. Does that point of view seems to make everything work as on that level, I mean, on a good level, as we see, as we appear to want things to be smooth, like the plumbing doesn't break all the time.
Well, as far as the relative level is concerned, what you're saying is true. But there's a happiness that is beyond plumbing. Not breaking. There's a happiness beyond everything.
Well, that's why we're here. But I... Okay.
The idea is to find your real happiness. To find out what is real happiness. It's unconditioned. It has nothing to do with person, place, or thing. Happiness is your real nature. You are happiness. Happiness is another word for you. But it's unconditioned. It's not replacing good for bad or bad for good. It has nothing to do with good and bad. Those are relative terms. Happiness is another word for absolute reality, for consciousness, for ultimate oneness, for pure awareness. That's synonymous with happiness. And it's omnipresent. So when you have the real happiness, you see it in the world, because the world becomes yourself. And there is none other than yourself that exists.
But there's something beyond that, just being as we are, seeing beauty, happiness, joy, peace everywhere.
Who sees that?
That's, and even though it is the ego seeing that, it's still not. It's not me.
That's the opposite of bad.
Pardon me?
It's the opposite of bad. Seeing all these good things.
Yeah.
So when you see a beautiful flower and then it fades the next day and dies, you become disillusioned. You have to go pick another flower.
But it never does die because the seed in the flower is never seen.
But as far as you're concerned, there's birth and death. Just like with bodies. Old flowers die, new ones are born. Just like people. So you look at that condition and you say, what does this mean? I think you say that. What's the purpose to all this? Is that what life is all about?
Creation.
For whom is creation? Creation is a bad dream.
Creation is a bad dream.
Yes. Or a good dream.
No, I know all creation is a bad dream. Because all of creation is birth and death.
It's a
dream. Yes.
That's why they don't worship Brahma anymore. They just worship Shiva and Vishnu.
Creation is a bad dream?
Mm. Because everything you see happening in the world is happening in creation. The United States is about to go to war with Iraq. That's creation. And then you fall in love and you think it's going to last forever. That's creation. But people grow old, they grow tired, they die, that's all part of creation. Now, what is the cause of creation? The mind. When the mind slows down, creation ceases. And you just become yourself. So you want to be yourself or be creation?
Is that mind synonymous with God?
Mind?
That mind?
Yes, synonymous with God. Because God is a result of mind. Everything comes out of your mind. Everything that you behold. The universe, God, people, places, things, reincarnation, karma.
It would be God if the word pointed to some kind of absolute. It would be a God as the
essence of God. Sure. The personal God, that's right.
But it's not God using as a word to point to that absolute.
No, we talk about God. Whenever I refer to God, I'm talking about absolute reality or consciousness.
So then God wouldn't be the mind?
No, not in that case. But usually when people refer to God, they refer to a personal God. Which is okay as long as you believe you're the mind and body.
Can you say that the ego does everything and also the bodily Gita says God is the doer? That's coming from the point of the body-mind.
God is the doer, yes. Comes from body-mind, that's right.
So God, as we think of as God as the creator, is still the ego's idea, the mind of the ego.
Exactly, yes.
That's pure ego.
It's pure ego. But I don't like to call it pure ego. Because it sounds important.
So who's the doer?
There is no doer.
There's no doer.
No doer exists. Never has existed.
So does the Bible do you say God is the doer?
There's a point, yes, it says that God, the personal God, is the doer. Because that God is the doer.
Is what?
Is the doer, because God tells you to do this and do that. You say God made me do it. That kind of a God is the doer.
What is the relationship between absolute consciousness and the functioning of mind? If there is any.
Functioning of mind?
Yes, the mind is, that is an offspring of consciousness in some way.
I don't think so.
Where does it arise from?
It doesn't.
Well, where does the appearance come from?
The appearance comes from your imagination.
I imagine there's mind.
It's called false imagination. That you imagine there's a mind, and then there's an appearance.
Probably.
It's like the optical illusion we always talk about. The sky is blue. Or the mirage in the desert. You look in the desert and you see tanks coming. And they're coming and you think it's false. And they blow you apart. And you travel around.
The Sankacharya actually said that all is illusion, there's only Brahman in the universe and Brahman are one. But don't you have to come to a place of first seeing everything as an illusion, then there's a place where everything is simply the self, and would that extend to the...
No, you don't. Because when you come to that place where you see everything as an illusion, it's the ego who sees all that. Mm-hmm. But if the ego is destroyed, then where's the place? Where's the illusion? Everything is gone with it. The ego mind invents all these things.
The illusion is that there seems to be an illusion.
That's the illusion, right?
But you said you see the illusion. You see like pictures on the screen.
Sure I do. I see everybody sitting in this room. But I see everyone as consciousness.
Also, do you see your body of Robert in this room too?
Well, sure I do.
See that as consciousness.
I see my body as consciousness.
We make the mistake of thinking that the bodies are seeing the bodies, and that's why we can receive them as bodies, whereas the truth is consciousness isn't seeing it from a place, so it's only seeing itself.
It's just a different viewpoint. That's right. In the movie, you see the screen and you see the images. But most of us forget there's a screen. And we're only concerned with the images. But the screen exists, whether there are images or not. The screen always exists. In the same way, consciousness exists, whether you're aware of it or not. You can identify with your body, and that's where all the trouble starts. Or you can identify with consciousness and become free. And realize all of life is only superimposed on the screen, on consciousness.
And only the screen exists, period.
That's it.
Since there is no time in a certain sense, we're always free to really make that choice. It's not like we're stuck for a long time and then maybe someday we'll get that choice. But it's really, as long as we drop that idea that we're bound with time.
That's right, it's an idea. It's a belief.
That question, how long does it take, is really making the first assumption that you're stuck in that to begin with.
Yeah.
How long does it take?
Yeah.
When you say how long does it take, it holds you back.
Right.
It keeps you back from realizing.
This lady said that we see, or the ego sees the flower, and in a sense that's really not true. Consciousness knows, in a sense, everything. It's only the reaction that seems to be ego. You know,
there's no ego and there's no flower.
Right.
There's only consciousness.
And when there's reaction, there seems to be an appearance of ego.
When the mind is active,
right,
everything takes place. Flowers, death, birth, imagination.
Can the mind be active if there's no ego?
I feel like that.
Oh, sure, I know. Back to that.
See, that's your ego, you're fighting. Your ego doesn't want you to do anything. It wants you to stay the way you are. So it will tell you all these things about vegetables and everything else.
Rutabaga. Cabbage.
When you say about your own freedom, one of the freedom you have is not to react, I think virtually it's impossible for the Ajnani not to react, because even not reacting is reacting. I think maybe for the Jnani,
there are many distractions from the real mind.
So why not start at the top and just awaken and become free of it all?
When we ask these questions, it's like the awakening stage has to appear first to someone, you know, say other people. They're in our work, they're in, you know, the waking state of the ego that's asking the question. So right there you've got the fact that the waking state is appearing and you're taking it to be real. So it seems like there's the time for inquiry.
Of course. You should spend your hours all day long asking yourself, to whom does this come? Every time you react to any condition, ask the question, to whom does it come? Even if it's a good reaction.
Even if it's just seeing that the world is in front of your eyes.
To whom does it come? And you should start as soon as you get out of bed.
I find it's just as disruptive having something I wanted to come to me, and that giddiness and the happiness, that supposed happiness for having it, I lose self-inquiry on that, as well as something that just is...
Remember, happiness and unhappiness are two sides of the same coin. Do not allow happiness to fool you, human happiness. Because you know how long that lasts. Therefore, work on yourself. Catch yourself. Catch yourself being humanly happy. enjoy the happiness, but ask yourself, to whom does it come? And you will realize that it's your ego being happy with itself for a while. And then they'll turn it into something else. Remember, the only thing permanent in this life is change. Everything must change. Therefore, do not become disillusioned because you won the lottery or you met somebody you love very dearly or you inherited a new home or a car. Do not allow that to cause you not to work with your sadhana of self-inquiry.
From your point of view, is it impossible to love one person more than another?
No.
To be able to see their development is different.
Who sees?
Well, from your point of view.
From my point of view, all is well.
All is well.
Does Yanni get angry?
Nope. Except sometimes to teach a lesson.
So he fakes it?
Sometimes.
He has the appearance of anger.
Sometimes.
Because he fakes happiness. I mean, fakes the appearance of...
It's not faking.
Sometimes.
But I'm not asking whether he fakes it or not, what I'm asking is, does anger come to a yoni?
Not really. Unless he fakes it.
I've been reading I Am That, and Nisargadatta was known for getting angry a lot.
I know.
He did, too.
He used to get very angry at Dasakar. But that was the appearance.
So you're saying it was an act?
Yes.
Because someone asked him a question on that, and he said, when I identify with the gunas, then anger arises. When I stop identifying with it, then anger disappears. So he was saying, at that moment, because I was identifying with it, the anger arose. But when I recognized the anger and just continued identifying with it, it disappeared.
He didn't mean that.
That's more extreme.
If he spoke like that, it wouldn't be a yoni.
No.
Well, that's what it says in the book.
I know. There is no emotion in the yoni. There's no anger or happiness, human. Unless they're playing on an act. Because the mind has been completely transcended.
There are no bodies.
There are no bodies.
So he was acting?
Apparently.
He acted a lot.
He sure did.
Oh, that couldn't be that couldn't be understood as just his samskaras. I remember reading in Pripura Rahasya, they were talking about three types of yanis, and one type completely destroys any kind of samskaras. Another type that hasn't occurred, and that he draws from that from time to time to appear to be human, I suppose.
Yes, I recall that. But that's only for an interpretation of a book. But you have to understand in reality there's only one yoni, not two or three or four.
Well, I suppose the question really is then, you know, what was Nisargadatta coming from the level of the mind, or was he a yoni?
He was a yoni.
Regardless of all the things we hear about him,
I mean, I heard one point he was really angry at this one woman because she was going to see another shooter, and he was going to throw the table at her or something like that. He was yelling at him, saying, get out, go see him, don't come back, you know.
Did he miss with the table?
He did all these things.
Yeah.
It was all fun.
So many things in I Am That can be misleading.
Yes, they can.
You don't read it the right way.
And that's why I've told you many times those books are dangerous to some people.
Somebody said, an old teacher of mine, that Jesus never laughed.
He never laughed?
I don't believe
it. I wasn't there, I don't know.
But if you're young, Jesus was the same, would that the consciousness would be the same, would permit, well, I've seen you that.
Now, see what you do. As you develop yourself, you have some of your personality left in your body.
You have what?
Some of your personality.
Uh-huh.
That's sort of human. That's still part of the illusion.
So that
appears to be there. So when you see a yoni reacting in a different way, it has to do with their personality, which doesn't even exist, but it appears to exist for your sake. And none of these quirks exist, but they appear to for your sake.
So from the onlooker, actually, the yoni looks just like anyone else.
Yes. And they see in the yoni what's in them.
But don't we see in each other also what's in us, not just the yoni?
Yes, we do. The onlooker sees wherever he looks, he sees himself.
So the point of the view of the onlooker, that the yoni is not any different than anyone else, how is one to distinguish?
That's why it is said that you must turn within yourself, and the answer will come out of yourself, and you will know.
Well, Ramana would say that you can tell, because when you're in the presence of a yoni, you feel great peace. In other words, their peace becomes your peace.
That's true to an extent. But if the yoni is walking in the marketplace, and you bump into him, you will not be able to tell, usually. But if you're in a class with the yoni, then there's a peace, yes, then you feel peace.
Well, what I'm saying is, when people was with Nisargadatta, and he was getting angry and carrying on, obviously he looked like anyone else.
But people felt a great peace with him. Except those he chased away.
Yeah, well...
A lot of people didn't feel anything around Ramana.
That's right.
Yeah, I guess that's the point.
It all depends on yourself. If you work on yourself, if you go within, then you will be led to the right teacher at the right time. And all will go well with you. But if you're only doing things externally, you'll make a lot of mistakes and go to the wrong person.
I think that is also part of where you need to be at that time, though, too.
Yes, everything is preordained. So why worry about these things? Turn within, find yourself, and be firm. Most people go around saying, who's the yoni, who's not, who's enlightened, who's not. It's a waste of energy. Forget about all this, it doesn't matter. Find yourself. And then see if those questions come to you.
Well, the in the process of finding yourself, the question of practice comes up. And is not vichara itself a practice?
You can call it a practice, but it's a technique for destroying the ego. And if you practice it enough, when you call it a practice, you will see amazing results. But we're using words and semantics. We say this is a practice, this is a technique. It doesn't matter what you call it. We should all do it.
Well, it's not to say as if vichara is the only
technique to destroy the only path.
Oh, there are many paths, of course. It depends on the temperament of the devotee.
But it is a practice itself. So, in the end, if everything is predetermined, the question arises, why do we practice at all? Nevertheless...
Because you act as if it's not predetermined. You have to act as if nothing is predetermined, even though it is. You will do what you're supposed to do. That's why we're told to stop reacting completely and to dive deep within the self and become liberated.
But Yanamaga is a pathless path.
Sure, you can say that, of course it is. But what good are those terms if they don't mean anything?
Well, it almost seems as though you were saying that, well, we need to do vichara. And you know, we talked about surrender, that was another path, and witnessing. And what I'm getting at is whether we should think in terms of cause and effect. If we do this, that will be the cause, and the effect would be self-realization. What I'm saying is that self-realization ultimately is something that just happens of itself. In the meantime, you just pretend, oh, if I do this, this will happen.
What you should do is stop thinking. And you should do everything you can to stop your mind from thinking these things. Because all the things that you're saying seem important, but they have no validity to Atma Vichara. The less we think, the better off we are. Even about the practice.
That's a question I have, Robert. About the... What is the point, if there is a point of encounter, between an inquisitive, quite egoic mind, wants to know everything, all the details, by one side, and at the other side is the... You yourself have said before, don't take as granted all what I tell you. Come up with your own conclusions. The Buddha said, be a lamp unto yourself.
Yes.
So you have to find a medium term, a position in between these two extremes.
Not really.
No?
Because when you say you have to find, who has to find? We go right back to the ego.
Right. All these are...
All we have to do is to still the mind.
Right. And any of these activities...
Whatever helps us.
Are amazing.
All of the things that help us to still the mind are good.
Right.
As long as they're helping us to still the mind. But if they make us too active, then we're on the wrong track.
Yeah. Trying to clarify any point to the utmost extreme or... trying to read too much, all that is just feeding the ego or the mind.
Yes.
Extremely.
Yes. Simplicity. Keep everything simple. Quiet.
Who doesn't want to accept Atma Vichara? I mean, if I don't want to accept Atma Vichara as a practice, if I don't want to accept a practice also, I'm sort of resistant. resisting this, and who is resisting? Is the ego, I guess.
Of course. And then you look for other paths, and you try this, and you try that for a couple of months, and you try something else. But you never sit down and try to quiet the mind. We'll keep searching. The mind searches. The mind never wants to rest. So you've got to observe your mind. You've got to become the witness to your mind. And keep inquiring, for whom is the mind? And then you'll come home free.
Really looking for our questions to be distinguished and not answered.
True, of course.
When we refer to the mind, we're just referring to the thoughts that occur. There isn't there any entity such as a mind.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A mind doesn't exist.
No.
The mind is only a conglomeration of thoughts. So do not think of your mind as an entity. It's the thoughts that you have to subdue, because you think too much. It doesn't really matter what's right, what's wrong, what's good, what's bad. All thinking has to stop. And then reality comes of itself.
Ramana said that mind is nothing more than a bundle of thoughts.
Mm. True.
And there's no location of that bundle of thoughts.
There's no one?
There's no location. There's
no location.
I mean, there isn't like a bundle that
there's no real bundle.
Keeps that's a finite bundle that finally gets the last stick, last thought, and it's gone.
That's right. The thoughts don't even exist. But they appear to exist. And that's called the personal eye. So that's why we're told to follow the eye. And when the eye disappears, so will everything else.
Follow the eye inward to the source, not outward.
Inward, yes. If you follow it outward, you have all kinds of problems. You follow it inwardly, and it becomes the I Am, pure reality.
It's funny how we take words to be so real, like the word bundle.
It's
just like the idea of bundle. You know, it's funny how we give reality to these things that are just meant to be tentative descriptions. It's like we miss the intention. Mm-hmm.
And the mind images all these things out of luck and makes a case out of them. And then we have to destroy everything.
That's because we don't really focus on the silence. It's like we focus on what comes out of it.
Exactly. Be still and know that I am God. See, most of you are thinking. Why do you allow yourself to think? Catch yourself before you make up stories. Always catch yourself before the thoughts go past your nose. And you can catch yourself by simply observing and being aware that you're thinking. Becoming the witness to your thinking. Or keep asking yourself, to whom do these thoughts come? but do it as often as you have to. That's why satsang is so important, because it's easier here. So if you come to enough satsangs, you carry it through during the working day. And you keep remembering, that's the thing. And the remembering becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. Until you actually stop your thoughts. And then you're free. There's really nothing profound about this teaching. Simple. Stop thinking.
So simple it eludes me.
Who's eluding? You can never be eluded. Never put yourself down. Watch what you say about yourself. No matter how many mistakes you make, get up again, push yourself off, and carry on.
You know, that is one problem I find about getting old, is that there were so many things in my memory that I find myself parroting. That phrase I heard somewhere, and I thought it was funny. And I said it. So simple,
I think
W.C. Fields.
Really? Where do all these thoughts stay? There's no cause. So they don't even exist. They appear to exist as I. That's why I tell you, get rid of the I, and all your thoughts will go also. There is nothing else to do but to be still.
In the phrase, I am consciousness, what I is that?
Real I. I am consciousness is simultaneously both correct.
And when you say to us, I love you, you are speaking.
I'm speaking of the universal I. I is omnipresence. Love is omnipresence. You is omnipresence. So the I is the entire universe. The I is the self. The I is pure consciousness.
But when we, speaking from our ego point of view, say we love you, it seems like in most of life, it seems manipulative.
Well, change it.
Well, I don't think I mean it that way. I think it comes from some deeper place.
Well, why even think about that?
Pardon me?
Why think about that at all? Why do you think about it at all? Stop thinking and just do it.
Say, I love you.
Speak from your heart. In other words, do not think where it's coming from. You don't want to walk around all day saying, this came from here and this came from there. Simply say what you mean I forget it.
It's afterwards that comes a doubt.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
There's no doubt at the time.
Exactly.
It's not the ego until that doubt comes in.
And that's right.
His actions.
It's always yourself. You are always yourself until your mind starts thinking. Then you lose it.
But even when you're like thinking of your grocery bill, or you know, you're still, that's not a problem.
You're still yourself.
Emotional thing, yeah.
If everything is spontaneous.
Right.
But as soon as you become attached, when you start worrying about it, or fearing it, or thinking something is wrong, then you can know the ego is at work.
It's the manipulation of whatever occurs.
The manipulation.
If you just, it occurs and it's gone, there's no problem.
If it occurs and you let it go, there's no problem.
Yeah. It's the...
The analyzation.
So what you said earlier is that every thought is non-dual until someone concerned is the I.
Oh. All thoughts are pure.
Non-dual.
Until you start thinking about them.
Someone gets concerned with the thoughts and starts identifying with them or personifying itself.
That's true.
So when you say don't think, you don't mean stop all your thoughts, you mean stop identifying with the thoughts that occur.
Yes.
The thinker.
Yeah.
Thoughts come before the thinker even comes out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty clear.
So is there any point where the stop, where the thoughts do stop?
The thoughts do stop, yes. And you just act spontaneously. But they appear like thoughts, but they're no longer thoughts. For instance, if I think I'm getting up off this chair, the thought ought to come to me spontaneously. But that's the end. So I'm not really thinking about getting off the gym. I just did it.
That's like the end, the duration is no longer present. The thought arose, it died, there was no concern.
That's right.
There's no separation between the thought and the action.
Exactly. It's all one.
Mm. One.
So really what happened is you lost all the sense of division, like that there were these separate thought entities, they come. And another one comes. It's just like
there's no beginning and no end.
Right.
So actually, non-duality is the real thing in the thought. what appears to appear is the I or the one concerned with the thoughts, and that's when duality surges up.
It all has to do with time and space. Time and space are non-existent.
So it's not that pseudo-personality or ego?
The ego has to do with time and space. So when time and space stops, everything is spontaneous and there's no ego. And all causation ceases. Causation has to do with time and space.
So memory ends too?
Memory ends also.
This is so important, Robert, because when you say that we should slow the thoughts, actually what you're implying is not to slow them, actually let them the thoughts be as they are in a non-dual way. The only thing is don't let the I come up in between. Or
you can say that.
Or the duality to appear in that sense.
Yes, if you just are spontaneous.
Right.
And you just act from your spontaneity. then you're safe. But if you have to think about it too much, then you're caught up in it again.
Right.
Like sitting here, there's no need for thoughts.
Right.
There's nothing to do. So there shouldn't be any thoughts. So when a thought starts coming, then I catch it and then go down. I don't play along the thought line.
You keep catching your thoughts faster and faster.
Witnessing just takes over.
And then it'll start slowing down.
When you're spontaneous, there's no possibility of the ego occurring.
There's no ego at all.
It's vanished.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Ego has to do with thinking.
And, excuse me, but when you try to catch the thoughts, there is an observer there, which is the eye, Robert, or the ego, trying to observe or catch the thoughts.
The eye, the ego, the mind, the simultaneous, they're the same. It's the same thing. So when you think, it becomes the I. I think. Then I act. My mind thinks. But when you're spontaneous, there's no I to think.
But that's how usually it happens. Everything is spontaneous, but the eye surges almost in an atomic time immediately.
I think, yes.
And captures the action thought, or the thought which is occurring.
You identify with the eye. So when you work on yourself and keep asking, to whom does this come? The personal eye becomes weaker and weaker. Until it disappears. So let's practice this together. Let's become still. Now what we're going to do now is just close our eyes and watch our thoughts and catch them. As soon as you see yourself thinking, ask yourself, to whom does it come? It comes to me. Hold on to the me. And ask yourself, who am I? Who am I? Over and over again. Or you can say, I. Then the thoughts will start again. Do the whole procedure over again. To whom did they come? To me? Who am I? Who is this I to whom they come? What is this I? Then some more thoughts will creep in. And you do it again and again and again until they start slowing down. And as you say, who am I? That will last longer and longer until it stops. So let's try that. Let's discuss your experiences that you had. Well, we got some first line. Let me hand it out for you. To take one past the background.
All right.
You've got all that unpacked.
When she fell asleep, it was too late.
The try to keep you quiet. But,
So when you went to grass, it's too tough.
So remember to love yourself, to bow to yourself, to worship yourself. Because God dwells in you as you. I love you all. Peace. Until we meet again, have a good time. Enjoy life. Keep eating.
Don't worry.
Thank you for the refreshments, Robert.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you very much.
There's a garbage bag.